watch the television, I'll read the news. I see America's youth learn to sing the blues. I see this stupid shit go on day after day, and I wonder when the politician will take it all away.
Hi, this is Prepared To. I was talking a few days ago to John Bot 007, and we thought that we were talking about how did we end up into the survival mode. And it's funny, I've been in this so long that I had to think about it for a while. How did I end up where I am now from where I was, say, 25 years ago? And I guess the best answer, I've heard people talk about it. As a matter of fact, I think it was War and Pale Horse mentioned that some people are born to it, some people are raised to it. It's a way of life. I grew up in a household where my dad and I and my brother backpacked extensively during our summers. My dad's a teacher, and so he had his summers off along with us. And, we'd go up into the Sierras and spend, 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks, a couple times we spent 2 or 3 months up there without coming back out again for provisions. We caught or snared whatever we were going to eat. And so I guess from a fairly young age, I felt comfortable in the wilds, and I didn't really consider that a survivalist. Certainly more of a backpacker is what I considered that. I was one of those kind of crazy people that used to drill holes in his toothbrush so he didn't have to haul all the weight. Looking back on that, I got a laugh. But, I think probably when I turned more towards self-sufficiency, which is kind of what I call a survivalist, probably was in the mid-80s. I just always kind of felt that, through the training I'd done and the service work, I saw people unprepared for even the smallest event in their life. I mean, be it a one-day storm or, a week-long storm or possibly a power outage, and they were just running around basically, not knowing what to do, not having enough provisions, no water to drink. A lot of us were on wells, and if your power goes out and you don't have a generator, well, you're not getting the water out of the well. In the last probably 4 or 5 years, there have become exotic ways to hand pump out of your domestic well, but back in the mid to early 80s, I never saw those hand pumps that went in next to your electrical pump. So I think what it was is it just kind of dawned on me one day that I don't want to end up at the the Red Cross station at the school gym in the event of a storm because I can't stay in my home. And I was just determined that that wasn't going to be myself or my family, and that we would have enough things at home to weather at least a couple of weeks by ourselves. And that seemed like a doable start. Wasn't financially a huge setback. We already owned camping gear and lanterns, stoves, backpacks, sleeping bags, tents. Most of the stuff that you have for either truck camping or backpacking. So we had a good start on that. Basically we put in a list of provisions and got the food and got the medical supplies that we could afford, and then just started adding to it every month. I think where it really paid off for me the first time was in the 1980, I can't remember if it was 87 or 89, the Loma Prieta earthquake, I lived a little less than 5 miles from the epicenter of that, and we really got hammered with that one. My house got knocked off its foundation. It didn't become unlivable, it just got real twisted and crooked, and the doors all wouldn't shutter open. And it was strange. I was laying under a car working on an exhaust system, kind of dozed off for a few minutes, woke up, and oh man, baseball game's about to start, and headed for the house. And then, of course, the earthquake hit. The car I was under fell off the jack stands, hit the floor, would have squashed me flat. And, it was about a half hour before my brother could get to me from his shop. So basically, it would have cost me my life because of, in a way, not being prepared for that under the vehicle I was working on. But I remember going through the house, and everything in the cabinets on the west side of the house parted company with the cabinets and sailed out across the room about 6 feet and then dropped straight to the floor. And, I managed to get out of the house and stood outside, and of course there was screaming and the transformers were sparking and some of them dropped out of the telephone poles. A couple of people crashed their cars out in front of where I lived at. And over at my brother's shop, he actually witnessed anywhere from 12 to 24 inch ripples in the asphalt parking lot that looked like, his description was water in a lake. But anyway, the earthquake hit us pretty hard, and we were without power for upwards of a week. Obviously, it was a good thing we knew how to turn our own gas off. A lot of the pipes had ruptured, ours didn't, but we were still capable of doing that. We had drinking water. We didn't have to drink the water out of the sink because there was always a question, how damaged was the water treatment plant? And, with the exception of some vehicle damage that I suffered, there was very little that it interrupted our lifestyle. We basically just went on going the way we did. We were able to help some of our neighbors out a little bit with some, housing over their heads. They lost a little bit more of their home. My brother and I ran shuttles back and forth to the Santa Cruz Mountains for about a week, taking bladders of drinking water in our four-wheel drive trucks up to the people who lived in the mountain area where it actually hit, that had no water. Many of them lost their houses, so, we did what we could to help them. And I think that was probably the first time that I really looked at it and says, geez, I guess we survived this. Maybe we're getting to the point where we wanted to be. And, then I guess I kind of fell into complacency almost. I kept what I had stored up and kind of sailed along through the 90s. And when we got up to maybe 98 or 98 and a half or something, my brother, who was at the time working in the computer industry, he started to get kind of shook up. And my brother's always kind of been a non-survival mode type guy. He's one of those people that shops every night on his way home from work and buys his groceries, and otherwise there's nothing at the house. And he started to get shook that, hey, we're going to be having some kind of serious problems, because he was working in the programming industry and they saw the shortcomings of, what was happening with some software problems. And he kind of relayed this to me and got me a little bit nervous. And I think I started looking around on the internet, and that's when I found War's Rubicon site through a search. And he was kind enough to grant me a spot in there, and I've kind of been here ever since, and learned an incredible amount from the people on the board. Hopefully I've given back some too. And it just, as Y2K rolled up to its climax, I felt pretty comfortable with the preparations I had. I'd be lying if I said I had everything that I should have had by 2000 when midnight rolled around for us. But when we came up to that last week where we all were asking, hey, have we done everything? Have we checked everything? Have we got everything? I was pretty comfortable with it. And I felt that if we had a two, three, 4 week, 5 week, even a couple of month downtime without power, maybe without even being able to purchase much food or fuel, I was prepared for that. And I laugh when I think back on it. I think what I had the biggest quantity of was toilet paper, because I just absolutely racked my brain, and I'm here to tell you there's no real good substitute for it. So I had cases and cases and bags and bags and barrels of toilet paper. I've slimmed that down a little since then. I don't think I had to buy toilet paper all of 2001, and I still got enough to probably go for a couple of years. But anyway, the survival mentality, survivalism, it's got a stigma where, unfortunately, a lot of people think of survivalists as militia members, and some survivalists may belong to some militias. Some militias aren't bad. Some are extreme to the point where their beliefs are so anti-mainstream that they'll probably never be accepted by the common person. But survivalists have fallen into that mode, and they kind of classify the lone wild-haired gunman or Unabomber as being a survivalist, and in my eyes, they're not. I mean, they're just kind of a nutcase. A survivalist is just purely a person who, through self-preparation and mutual aid with their partners, friends, spouse, whatever, plans to survive whatever kind of event might befall us. And to this day, I still continue to work at my preparations. I'm the few people who have been to my place, they know I'm working on a new house. That takes a lot of my time, but I still make sure that I spend at least a couple of days a month working on making my preparations go a little farther, putting in another fuel tank, maybe adding something to my stores, and I'll probably do that forever. I don't know. You think about how much is enough. I know War mentioned at some point that he had enough food for a year. I don't have enough food for a year. Sometimes that bothers me. Sometimes I think maybe I need more, and so I add some more to it. I think if space allows, I probably will expand that into a longer duration, and I think probably more with the mind that I'd like to be able to help out, some teammates or, maybe some of my neighbors that are of like mind but haven't got their survival position as well situated as I do. I think another thing I've done is over the years, and this has come straight from Rubicon, I never really gave it a whole lot of thought, but the caches out in the the woods above me, the Sierras, I've placed quite a few of those over the years, and they're not big ones, but they're the kind of thing that if I got knocked out of my house, run out of my house, or whatever happened, as long as I could take my trusty pistole with me or one of my rifles, I'll be all good if I can get to one of those caches, or at least get to a point where, hey, I can get back and maybe get some more of my stuff, which I guess is the intent of doing that. The survival mindset permeates your life. It's not something you do on the weekend. It's not something you just do as a lark, and it's not something you're going to do on the cheap. Planning to survive, when you really sit down and think about the things we depend on, public works, the government, and other things to provide for us, and, kind of expect to get up in the morning, throw the water on, and it runs, it's expensive to replace all those things. You buy generators, you buy pumps, you buy firearms for protection, you buy, months of food, fuel. It's a sizable undertaking, and I think, there was quite a few times when I was pretty depressed about where I was at in my survival preparations. And then there have been other times when, I'll sit down and chat with some people, either at the Ruby or some other people that live around here, and we'll kind of knock around what we have without really saying how much, and I feel like I'm in a lot better shape than most of them are that I talk to. So, you know, it kind of floats between this panic that I don't have enough, I didn't do enough, I didn't plan enough, to, you know, don't get complacent because, hey, I got this whole deal covered. Because I just got one of those burning feelings that, as I always do, that you'll never have everything covered. Murphy always picks his head up and pokes you in the eye and shows you that you probably should have planned for something else. I think the fact, that's kind of like people ask me in the business I'm in, are you still learning to do what you do? And I always respond the same way to them. I said, have you ever quit learning to do what you're doing, or quit learning something new? You might as well crawl off and die. I will be learning about the things that interest me probably till the last day I breathe. And I think if the day ever comes where I don't feel there's anything left, well, that's, I'm done. And, so I think the preparations, they're ongoing. By being a member of the Alpha Rubicon group, the people involved in that, they have a real step up because, we got 300 or 400 people that have different ideas that can, throw those ideas out on the bulletin boards, and, I'll be reading one of those, or you'll read one of those, and you go, oh, man, I didn't even think about that. I think that's the reason why the turnover rate at the Rubicon's low, is for people that are serious about survival or, self-reliance. They're not going to give up their spot. I think I'd give up my lunches for a week if it came down to having lunch money or having money to stay on the board. It's a family group. Even when I'm getting chewed on by Ghost or one of the other guys, it's like a buddy talking to me. And sometimes I'll have an idea on something, and one of the other guys will tell me, that's wrong. And you know what? You listen to them, you get the details of it, and sure enough, you find out, hey, you didn't have every single answer. Maybe you were wrong. I've been wrong once before, and I'll probably be wrong once again, huh? So I think that's just that's what keeps me in my interest peaked. And John Bott, he talked a lot about why he got into survival mode, and how he keeps himself enthused about it, keeps the drive going. I think it boils down to you don't want to let your family down, don't want to let your extended family down. And you sure don't want to let your teammates down. And so that's what drives you to keep, doing a little more, going a little farther, increasing preparation and your capability to be self-reliant. I've met probably more nice people that you could just sit back and shoot the poop with through survival networking, as I've met with the police departments and federal departments I've worked in. Some people, I think they've got this, total fear of anybody in uniform or with a badge or anything like that. And, I've just, majority of those people I've worked with over the years have just been wonderful. You always meet a few bad apples or a few people that, the mouth's writing checks, the brain can't cash, and you just have to deal with that. There's some Fruit Loops that fall through the crack of, every sidewalk, and, but all in all, it's been a very enjoyable run, and I won't be giving it up. This is something I'll practice for the rest of my life. With government trends the way they are, and watching the corruption and just the greed that basically drives politics, I don't see things getting better anytime soon. I certainly don't trust those people to make my decisions for me, or you know, be there to protect me in the event that I've got problems. As far as the local sheriff's department goes, I've got two sheriff's deputies by where I live. They must have to cover about 150 square miles between the two of them. And, you know, if something happened here, you know, be it a theft, burglary, break-in, you know, neighbors, something like that, having a problem, you know, they get out of here as quick as they can get here. But when the guy is 65 miles away, you know, a lot can happen in an hour. And so it's just, you know, it's up to me, it's up to you to be prepared to take care of yourself in that event. And I think the sooner people realize that they can't depend on, you know, public assistance or whatever you want to call that type of aid, without some reservation, you just can't depend on it to be there. If you are, you know, I think the last time you could depend on something like that is depending on mom to feed you when you were in diapers. And after that, I think, you know, a realist, they decide that they better be prepared to take care of themselves. It, you know, it's gravy if the water goes on when you do flip the valve. But if it doesn't go on, boy, I tell you, that just wipes out 9 out of the 10 people. The 10th guy, he prepared for that, and he's got drinking water and a generator so he can keep pumping water. The other 9 people are sitting there, you know, with one finger in their ear and going dee-dee-dee-dee on their lip, going, what do I do now? You know, of course, they do the same thing that the other 9 people down the road are doing, and that's haul down to the grocery store and see if they can get some drinking water then. And of course, it's been long had and long gone, or a long line. And I'm just not, I won't ever put myself in that position, never again. And so that's pretty much my view on the survival modes and the lifestyle that goes with it. You know, my spouse, she's not 100% behind it. She was around 2000 because she was scared. But, you know, after 2000, she would have slacked back a little bit, but we, you know, we found some middle ground that we could work on, so we still, you know, put some stuff away, and, you know, we gave some of the stuff we didn't need away to some of the food banks, and, you know, put in some new stuff to replace it. So, you know, I found ways to keep her motivated, for us to keep doing this too. You know, 9/11 rolled around. That was another kind of a big blow for us that, you know, hey, I'm not sure. I mean, being involved in the organizations I've been involved with over the years, I guess I never really kidded myself into thinking I was safe here in this country. I mean, it was only a matter of time before someone, you know, reach out and touch us. And it happened, you know, through negligence, arrogance, or whatever, it happened. You know, and certainly since 9/11, where I've been, you know, working much more actively with some of the groups involved in, you know, making sure we don't have this problem again, it's very plain and clear that, you know, there's a fear that it's coming. And, you know, that's not meant to panic anybody or get anybody going, oh my God, the guy knows something, he's not telling us. I don't. They don't. It's just, you know, an absolute, what it's been is just years of, I guess is the word, compliance, where people just kind of cruise along and figure everything's going to be rosy and great for their entire duration and their kids' duration. And then, you know, 2 aircraft, 3 aircraft fly out of the blue and basically knock your little apple cart over and things aren't okay anymore. And, you know, the world with the things that are happening now, I'm getting busier instead of less busy, and that means that certainly there's more things that need to be, you know, we need to keep an eye on in the world. There's certainly people out there that feel us ill will, and I'm not going to push a plow for them. So, you know, basically that's why we prepare. We prepare to be able to stand our ground. And, you know, stand our ground means standing your ground domestically as well as foreign, if that's what it takes. You know, nobody's going to push me off the dirt here without a heck of a lot of grunt. They're going to have to work at it. like I like to tell people, if you're going to push me off my land, you better bring your lunch because you're going to be here a while. And, you know, that's just my attitude, is that I'm not going to rely on anybody to save my bacon if the time comes. You know, if we got pushed out, we'd probably have a place to retreat back to with one of the other, teammates for a short duration of time till we could regroup. But in reality, it's up to us to make sure we're set up for what we've got to do. And so anyway, that's kind of my thoughts on the survival lifestyle. And I don't know, I'll keep it in mind, keep posting some stuff, and shoot the poop with John and Bama and a few of those, and see, shoot some ideas off each other and find out maybe we've all forgotten something. Anyway, I think we've got a good start, and certainly any of you guys that are able to listen to this, you're at the right place to get the information you need to, continue on in your preparations in your own area. Well, that's about it for tonight, and I'm going to sign off here. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.